How's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 318 of X-Labs, where we are continuing our Zlato tour here with the X-Deaths of Wolverine. I mentioned last episode how I was really, really enjoying, it was one issue. I really enjoyed it, and I was looking very, very much looking forward to seeing what the other half was going to be, and I enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed it, but the same word keeps popping up in my head when I'm trying to explain it. It's still bat spit, and I'm still really enjoying it. I do want to mention that I'm still feeling a little under the weather. Yesterday, I actually took one of our at-home COVID tests just to be sure, you know, just to rule that out as being something that I might have. And so long as I read the directions right and actually performed the test correctly, I'm clear. I don't have that. Maybe it's allergies. I don't know what it is. I'm still, you know, very, very bloated in the head, and you know, in a physical way or a physically feeling way, not so much a egocentric and narcissistic way. But I got a fair amount of pounding. Still congested. Maybe it's allergies. The weather has been very, very weird here. I'm staring out my window now, and it's actually pouring rain, which doesn't happen too terribly often here. But what I'm going to do today is we're going to go through the issue. We'll talk about the issue. We do have quite a bit of very, very interesting mailbag content that I would love to get to, but I don't want to shortchange it. So I'm going to play it by ear. We'll see how I'm feeling when I get out the other end here, and I'll decide then whether or not we'll pursue the mailbag, because I really don't want to shortchange any of this. There's a lot of very thoughtful content, a lot of wonderful discussion. I don't want to shortchange it. I don't want to rush it. And I don't want to gloss over it. So we'll see how I'm feeling at that point and, go from there. But for now, let's get into the book itself. This is The X-Deaths of Wolverine number 1, March 2022 cover date. Story's called Time to Die. Written by Benjamin Percy with art by Federico Vicentini. Easy for me to say. Colors, Dijo Lima. D-I-J-J-O. I apologize, I don't know how to say that word. Dijo Lima with Frank Martin. Letters, VCs, Corey Petit. Designs, Tom Muller. Head of X, still none. Edits, Baumgartner, Basso, White, Cebulski. Cover price, $6. This one went on sale January 29 of 2022. Now, in just looking at the cover, and, you know, we don't usually look at covers, but we seem to be looking at covers more often now. So maybe we just will from this point on, I don't know. This already feels, the X-Deaths, it already feels like it's going to be like the Powers of X of our two books here. I mean, we've even got a techno-organic phalanxy Wolverine here on the cover. It's a very striking cover. I've actually used it as the background of all of our Zlato content moving forward here. If you've looked at the quote-unquote cover art or the album art for these episodes, this is the cover that's the background of it. And while striking and beautiful and definitely attracting to the eye, it doesn't arouse much interest in me for a story, because the phalanx, as a concept, only ever worked the one time for me. That was way back, you know, the Phalanx Covenant, the launch of Generation X. That was the only time I actually cared about the phalanx. Maybe this story will convince me otherwise. Maybe it's not even a phalanx. It just looks phalanxy. Anyway, we open with... we don't quite pick up where we left off, or with who we left off with. Instead, we join Maura McTaggart, right after Inferno number 4. Alright, you've got my attention. Now, she recounts the events of what went down in that issue. Her demutanting, her exile, you know, the biggies. Well, not all the biggies, but some of the biggies, and we'll talk more about that at the end. Now, she rushes through the Krakoan Gateway one last time. Of course, you know, Doug Ramsey gave her, you know, one last out. You go, and you'll never come back, yada, yada, yada. Now, she winds up in Scotland, and it looks as though she's at Stonehenge. Maybe I'm just seeing things. Though, it does look like there is something of a Stonehenge in Scotland, though. It's called the Standing Stones of Callanish, or Callanay. Now, these actually predate the Stonehenge we all know by about two centuries. Though the real-life Scottish stones are like just upended rocks. Basically, they're just, you know, spires or obelisks, I guess you might say. While these look more like stacked Stonehenge-type stones, like two standing up, one across. I don't know. Am I dwelling again? Yeah, maybe I am. Let's move on. Maura is able to flag down a passing truck, which she jacks. She then drives it right into the gateway, toppling it to the ground. She hopes that this'll stop, or at the very least slow, those like Mystique from tracking her down and, well, you know, killing her. She then drives off into the distance. From here we get our double-page spread of hexagons in cred. And we got a cluster of four hexagons here. We see Maura X, Mystique, Black Tom, and then a shaded inbox. I guess we can just say that's redacted. And all the names of the folks in these hexagons are followed by the letter X. Or, you know, maybe the Roman numeral X, you know, 10 after them. So I guess maybe we are visiting all of Maura's lives, since this is Maura's 10th life, and these are all characters from right now. Maybe that's the case, you know? Hey, I did make that guess last time, though it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a hot take or anything. It's not like I went out on a limb or nothing. Though, I mean, it's probably far too soon to throw any babies up in the air just yet. We don't really know what's going on. Let's get back to comics, and we follow Maura back to the Kinross estate, which looks like it hasn't been inhabited for, like, ever. And this kind of leads to an over-analysis problem that maybe I'm having with this. You know, the rest of the world knew, or as far as the rest of the world knew, Maura died back during the Dream's End storyline, right? That was a long time ago. That was pre-Morrison. A lot of stuff has happened in the interim. So you would almost guess that in the years since, maybe someone else might have actually moved in. And maybe I'm dwelling again, but I mean, this just feels like it's caught in amber until we need it again, which... it works narratively, it just doesn't work realistically. Again, maybe I'm thinking too hard, maybe I'm overanalyzing. I'm known to do both. Now, it's worth noting that Maura has been coughing in almost every panel up to this point, which we could excuse. I mean, she's in Scotland, the weather is pretty crappy, she just went through quite the physical, emotional, and mental ordeal, so perhaps a little bit of hacking might be warranted. But... of course, this is a piece of fiction, so these aren't just coughs. They are, they're Chekhov's coughs. Now, Maura coughs into her hand, revealing that she's actually coughing up blood. And we'll find out more about that in just a little bit. From here, we go to an info page, and it's written by Destiny, and she's waxing on about Maura's inevitability. You know, she'll never escape. Her fate is sealed. And Destiny knows this because, well, she's Destiny, and she can see the future, right? From here, we jump to the Green Lagoon, where Black Tom is having himself a drink. Now, he notes that his drink has those little Jurassic Park ripples in it, you know, like to show something's causing the ground to shake nearby. Which, hey, that's a movie reference from me. Now, Blob doesn't feel it, but then again, he's the Blob, and nothing moves him unless a story calls for it. Anyway, Tom starts shouting about the veg, like he does, and he leaves the bar to investigate further. Now, he notes that Krakoa is, like, constantly changing shape. Hills grow taller, valleys grow deeper, earthquakes happen. I mean, Krakoa is a living creature, so movement, shaking, yada 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 is to be expected. Anyway, Tom says that this time feels a little bit different, and says that it feels as though there's maybe an intrusion going on. Just then, a giant tumor of sorts pops out of the ground, which... I mean, in fairness, is something we've seen happen at least once before. I think it led to the creation of that Leviathan that Logan fought and killed over in his season finale issue. From here, we shift scenes over to the McCarthy Medical Institute in New York City. Now, Maura is being checked out by Jane Foster, and it's revealed that, well, she's very, very ill indeed. Cancer, stage 4. Now, the use of Jane Foster here is pretty cool for a few reasons. First, I mean, her entire character of late has been predicated with, you know, fighting off cancer. Second, Mora still has her warlock arm, which doesn't even get brought up. You would imagine that had our gal visited like any other doctor on the planet, they'd probably have a question or two about that, right? But Jane is like, eh, whatever, and doesn't even question. It doesn't come up once. Now, about the cancer. Now, I'm fully aware of how quickly cancer can spread and absolutely ravage a body. But this is like an overnight thing, like literally overnight. So we have some questions here. Did Mora already have the cancer while on Krakoa and she just didn't mention it? Is her cancer part of why she was working so hard on a cure to mutancy? Did she want to cure herself of being a mutant so if she does succumb to the cancer, it doesn't reset reality? I mean, there's a lot of stuff we can think about here. Perhaps it was her mutancy in and of itself that was holding the cancer back to begin with. Now, if I were a guessing man, I guess maybe I'd go for the latter. I really don't know. Because the thing of it is, the first thing she asks Jane for is to fetch some Krakoan miracle meds. So you would think if she already knew about the cancer while she was in the No Place, she'd already have taken the miracle meds? Or maybe this is a very aggressive cancer and she was taking the meds and that only just held it back, but didn't wipe it out completely? I really don't know. Maybe we'll find out more as we go. Anyway, Jane reminds Mora here that A, the miracle meds don't cure cancer, and B, there's a waiting list a mile long for even a sniff of the petals. And point A there about how it's not a cancer cure, we'll talk more about that on the other end. Now, Jane tells her not to give up, and she asks if there's anything that she wants to tell her. I'm not sure if these two have ever met before, but if they haven't, well, Dr. Jane's got a pretty good bedside manner. So, Mora tells Jane that she really can't say any more than she already has. Just then, a nurse pops in to inform the doc about a morgue emergency, which are totally things doctors have to attend to with regularity, yes? I mean, I'm not a doctor. I don't even play one on a podcast, but I mean, that just seems weird. Anyway, the nurse is immediately revealed as being Mystique. And I mean immediately, like they don't even save this reveal for a turn of the page. It's like right there. We see this nurse pop in like halfway down the page, and on the last panel, it's Mystique. So it takes away any sort of tension because the first thing you see on this page is Mystique. So really, no tension there. So Mora and Raven tussle for a bit until Jane as Valkyrie bursts back into the room to settle the tea kettles. Amid the confusion, Mora throws herself out a third, fourth, fifth, sixth story window. I mean, she dives out the window. They're not on the ground floor here. So I guess this is where her story ends. This will be the last we ever see of Mora. Anyway, back to Krakoa, where Black Tom is checking on the tumor. A humanoid form emerges from it, which, if you've already seen the cover of this issue, won't come as any surprise. It does surprise Tom, however, and it also kills him. Back to New York, where evidently Mora survived falling like 40, 50, 60 feet to the city street below. Maybe the warlock arm saved her. I don't know. Anyway, the ex-desk has eyes on her and, positively IDs her via their mutant database? What? But wait. Nobody knew she was a mutant, right? I mean, even now, post-Inferno, less than 15 people should know that A, she didn't die back in the long ago, and B, that she was ever a mutant. So this is, if the ex-desk knew that Mora was around and Krakoa didn't even know, I don't know. And anyway, we can see that among the ex-deskers is, wait a second, Dolores What's-A-Face? Wasn't she sniped in a recent issue of Wolverine? Written by, you know, the same dude who's writing this? I mean, she's totally dead, right? She was shot in the head! Anyway, Dolores orders an extraction team be sent out to deal with this. From here, we keep following Mora as she flees to New Jersey, and, I can smell it from here. We're in New Jersey. But, I mean, she can't use the Krakoan gateways anymore, so, but she's traveling pretty expediently. You know, she made it from Scotland to New York, now into New Jersey. And of course, New York and New Jersey are next door, but I don't know, it feels like we're doing this a little quickly. Anyway, she pops into a drugstore to pick up some hair dye and a pair of scissors, which kind of a red flag, right? If you were the cashier and saw that this person bought hair dye and scissors, you might raise an eyebrow. I mean, I guess it's not as though she bought, like, rope, a saw, garbage bags, and bleach, but still. Anyway, we continue to follow her into a bathroom where she changes into her Boom Boom cosplay. She cuts her hair short and, hey, it's not even an artist error this time, and dyes it. She dyes it not so much blonde, but shockingly yellow. She really looks quite a bit like Boom Boom here, and stands to reason, right? You know, when in New Jersey, you know, you do as New Jersey does. Now, one thing she forgot to buy during the shopping trip is a pair of gloves, because she's still showing off her warlock arm, like, loud and proud. It's there. You know, you cannot not see it. From here, we jump over to the No Place, where the Tumarine is sniffing around. He appears to be on Mora's trail. Not sure why just yet, though. I do have a theory that we'll talk about later. From here, we jump back to New Jersey, where Mora is trying to blend in, with her warlock arm still in full view. Now, she's being pursued by the CIA, but manages to somehow evade them. Like, she slips right by and makes her way into a nearby building. So, I guess the haircut worked? I don't know. Now, you know, the building she pops into is a storefront for Epiphany Platforms, which is a tech company, you know, figure Android, Apple sort of a thing here. Now, once inside, she gets a sales pitch by a hologram of the Epiphany CEO, a man named Anrab Shakladar. Now, his spoo is pretty much all about AI, which, of course, is the sort of thing Mora has been fighting against ever since we started this thing. Also, the hologram mentions something called the Epiphany Memory Drive, which is an ocular implant that records everything you see and say and can be uploaded to the cloud. So, I mean, we've been dealing with Cerebro helmets and cradles and backups, so this sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? You know, maybe you don't have to be a mutant to have your memories backed up now, I don't know. Just then, the CIA burst in to nab our gal, but she is somehow able to disarm one of them, blasts her way out of the place, escapes to an alley unpursued, and then she motorcycle jacks some poor schlub and once again beats it out of Dodge. From here we go to an info page, and it's a bit of a bio on our CEO, Anrab Shakladar. Now, by all accounts, he doesn't seem like a villain at all. He's actually a pretty nice guy from the way it looks here. He's a philanthropist. He's just seems like a good dude. Just a tech dude who's got an interest in artificial intelligence. And I like this. I like that they're really impressing upon us that this dude isn't to be distrusted, because I feel like we, as the readers, as people who have been following this since day one here, are supposed to be unnerved by him immediately and just have like a knee-jerk distrust because of our familiarity with, you know, post-humanity and AI and what that means for the future. I like that it's kind of a swerve here in a way, unless I'm missing something very, very obvious, which is certainly a possibility. From here, we go back to Krakoa, and we're at the Assassin's Creed Animus / Quantum Leap Accelerator, and Gene recognizes an odd and seemingly impossible presence. And of course, it is the techno-organic tumor Wolverine from the cover. But how can this be? Well, perhaps we'll find out next time. Well, not next episode, but the next time we look at an issue of Zlato. Next episode, we will be finding out how Cyclops died this time in X-Men number 7. And gang, you know what really sucks? Being a slob who puts empty pill bottles back in the in your medicine cabinet, because I just went looking for my allergy meds and the bottle was there. There was just nothing in that damn bottle. So that really, really sucks. And might inform the direction of the rest of this episode. Let's talk about Slato here, the X-Deaths of Wolverine, which, you know, I mentioned Batspit Insane. And it kind of is. But this one felt a little bit sloppier than X-Lives. And I don't blame creative for that, and we'll get into why as we move forward. We get a bit of a rationalization from the get-go. We open with Mora, of course, right? And she is presenting herself as nothing more than a victim, and of course she would. see herself as a victim because she thinks what she's doing is in the right. But all she mentions here is that she was betrayed by the two men who were supposed to protect her, in Xavier and Magneto. And rather than think of this as her framing herself as a victim, maybe it's just a case of me being a cynic. Maybe it's a case of me knowing or thinking I know a little bit about how the sausage is made. But it makes me think that the latest mutant extinction event she was revealed to have been planning during Inferno might not have actually been shared with the rest of the X-Creative team until these issues were already in the can. Because if anything, we were left not feeling a whole lot of sympathy for Moira after Inferno number 4. Right? She was revealed as being the betrayer, not the betrayed. And here, she is our point of view character, and I feel like we're supposed to sympathize with her, and we're supposed to be rooting for her. So maybe nobody bothered to tell Ben Percy? You know, the guy responsible for kicking off the post-Hickman era? Hell, you know what? Maybe the editors themselves didn't know, because it's clear to me that they were all too terrified to ask Hickman what his plan was from the get-go. So, who knows? Now, that's not to say that this issue is perfect otherwise, because there are a lot of things we can poke holes in, at least as of the reading. I mean, things may be revealed as not being exactly what they seem as we move forward, but as of right now, with absolutely no knowledge of what's to come, there are some things we could drive a truck through here. First, do the magic meds cure cancer? Well, Jane Foster says they don't. And Moira agrees, but suggests that they will slow the cancer down. I could be mistaken, but I'm fairly certain one of those three petals was promoted as a cancer cure. Maybe not all cancers, but certainly a cancer cure. And I mean, didn't Jeff Bannister's own daughter, in a story written by Ben Percy, get cured of her cancer via the meds? So I mean, can it be one and not the other? While on the subject of Jane Foster, did she and Mystique fight? Or did they just stand there like a couple of goofs once Moira jumped out like a fifth or sixth story window? Also, how did Moira manage to travel? I mentioned that, you know, the travel is very expedient. How is she doing this? I mean, she's got a warlock arm. She probably has no ID. She's presumed dead by everyone except the friggin' X-Desk for some reason. I don't know. Am I thinking too hard? That's certainly a possibility. You know, let's keep with the X-Desk. How does the X-Desk know who or what Moira is? Like, honestly, was Percy told that Inferno was going to end a certain way and then it didn't? Like, was there going to be, like, a big worldwide revelation that Moira is responsible for Krakoa, she didn't die, she's a mutant? Was this supposed to be, like, a broadcast that just didn't happen because, you know, plans changed? I mean, because this otherwise is just so out of left field, and it really just, it doesn't make sense. Speaking of which, how the hell is Dolores still alive? She was shot in the head. What? I don't know. I don't know. And honestly, at this point, there isn't a whole lot more to really go on. And, I mean, I could talk myself in circles trying to rationalize or debunk, but that's pointless because we still have, what, 8 chapters of this to go. So I'll put a pin in that for now, but of course we will bring it up again as we work our way through. For now, though, I mentioned at the end of last episode with X-Lives that one of the things I really, really liked about it was the fact that I couldn't call it. You know, we talk about being able to put theories forward, and when we finished reading X-Lives, I was like, I haven't the foggiest idea what the point of this is. I knew I enjoyed it, but I didn't know where it was headed or what the ultimate goal was. Well, with X-Deaths, I do have a theory. It may be outlandish, it may be completely wrong, but that's part of the fun, right? Making outlandish claims and then having them debunked and thrown in our face at the end. But let's wrap up today by suggesting something that might come of this. Now, my theory has to do with Moira's sixth life. Now, when we read X-Lives on our, you know, double-page spread of hexagons and cred, we did see the Roman numeral, VI, 6, after a few of our characters' portrait, right? And I questioned whether or not that meant that it was a reference to Moira's sixth life. Of course, we also saw one that was had a Roman numeral 7, and today we had Roman numeral 10s, right? So let's talk about Mora's sixth life for just a bit. And of course, if you don't remember, this was the one that we read in the horribly boring X to the third power bits of Powers of X. That's year 1000, I believe it was, where at the end of it, it was revealed that Mora, McTaggart, and Wolverine were the only two mutants left. They were kind of kept in like a zoo by the librarian as they prepared for ascendancy with the Phalanx, right? And Mora was kept alive via blood transfusions from Logan, his healing power, and yada, yada, yada. So maybe this post-human-looking Logan tumor that we met, that, you know, killed Black Tom and went to the No Place and is, you know, stomping around Krakoa right now, maybe this was a failsafe of Mora's. You know, maybe there'll be a blood transfusion with some healing factor hoodoo that will ultimately clear her of the cancer, or at least stop it from killing her. Because, I mean, I don't know anything about multiple lives here, but we might assume that, you know, Mora's cancer is something that she experienced in all of her lives, right? That's something that would come had she reached a certain age. And in the sixth life, well, she was getting transfusions from Wolverine. And, you know, to take it a step further, as Mora's sixth life ended, you know, Wolverine killed her to send her back and reset everything. That was just as ascendancy was setting in, right? The librarian had called it. You know, the Phalanx were coming to assimilate everything. So maybe this Wolverine that we're seeing that popped out of the tumor that killed Black Tom, that Jean Grey was able to take note of, perhaps this is the Wolverine from Mora's sixth life post-ascendancy. Could be completely wrong. I don't know. But that's my hot take. That's my theory. I'd love to hear your guys' theories as we continue working our way through this here. One last thing about the issue. I enjoyed the art. It evoked a feeling of David Baldion's work, which, as you guys know, has grown on me quite a bit since we first met him back with X-Factor number 1. But I like the art. The story, Batspit Insane, I enjoyed it. There's a lot of questions I have. A lot of things that I can't get out of my own way about because, like I said, I think I know how the sausage is made. I could be and probably am completely wrong. But, you know, it's just the takeaway I have. And I come away from this issue still very much looking forward to seeing how this plays out, which, like I said last time, is as good a compliment or as high a compliment as you can give a current year comic book. Wanting more is a pretty big deal. But I think that's where we're going to leave it for today. This is just like last episode. I've recorded a good portion of this with my eyes closed. And looking at my Audacity window now, I have about an hour and 30 minutes of me blathering and stammering and sneezing and coughing. So I don't know how long this episode will wind up being. I know I have a lot of stuff to cut out of it, but hopefully we'll get through that, and hopefully I won't just upload this as a two-hour cough fest, because that would be very unpleasant to listen to. So I will be cutting this together, and we will get into the mailbag in coming episodes. Like I said, I've read the letters that have been sent, and it's some very, very thoughtful stuff, and it's stuff that I would like to discuss at length and not gloss over and actually be able to elaborate on, and unfortunately I'm just not in the shape to do so right now. But we will get to it, of course, and I do apologize to the folks who've written in for the delay. But that's where we'll end it for today. Contact information is in the show notes. I don't feel like stammering through that right now, but I do encourage anybody who wants to discuss these issues or anything at all to reach out and get a hold of me. But I'd like to thank everyone for joining me today and deciding to share a little bit of your day with me, or allowing me to share in yours. And till next time, as always, I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya.